Disrespect will take you places you can't get to from here. Disrespect entertains with a look at the challenges and sometimes the successes of people with disabilities who have taken from them or are denied the full choice of possibilities to affect for the better their own lives or the lives of those above them. Disrespect This Week explores the links between environment and disability. Environment, in this case, being polycarbonate bottles and the chemicals that leave them. It's interesting to note that our guest proposes a government limit on the amount of toxins coming from the bottles and not a tax, so that makers are not able to pay for the privilege of poisoning their consumers, a viewpoint that's of particular interest in this election, 2008.
The show welcomes Neil McCluskey, a biomedical professor at the University of Guelph, who has published a study, along with his co-workers, in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences that finds that low doses of bisphenol A impair the creation of synapses in the brain. Welcome to the show, Dr. McCluskey.
Thank you.
All right. What interested me most was the iffy nature of results so far, that maybe it affects young children and maybe it's too small an amount to affect anybody seriously except small children, and maybe it doesn't even affect small children. But now it appears, as a result of your work, in published, wasn't it, in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences?
Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, that's correct.
Yeah.
In the U.S.
We have results that indicate there is an observable effect on adult brains, and an effect that we don't know about regarding the long-term impact of
yes, that's
this.
Correct.
Yeah. How'd you get into it in the first place? I mean, obviously this is your field, but I mean, what did you just get? Did you get fed up like I did with all the
speculation? No, I've actually been. It's a bit of a long story, because it has its origins in the stuff that had been done.
Okay.
With bisphenol A in the reproductive tract, which has been going on for close to 15 years now.
No, I didn't know. Okay.
That where people in starting in mice and then in other small animal species have shown that bisphenol A interferes with reproductive tract development.
Right.
Okay. Now, these studies...
Both male and female reproductive tracts?
Predominantly male.
Okay.
Okay. Now, the reason that I got interested in this was because of some observations that suggested that the mechanism of bisphenol A interference with reproductive tract development might be similar to some of the mechanisms which we believe to be involved in hormone-induced synapse formation in the brain.
Hormone-induced plaque formation?
Hormone-induced synapse formation, yeah. The synapses in the brain.
Oh, okay.
We tend to think of synapses in the brain as being things that are rather like computer connections, wires, that can connect one cell to another. And
right.
that view was the sort of original view of the nervous system, that the nervous system was like some extraordinarily complicated computer system,
right,
with lots and lots of wires and connections.
Right.
But that view of the brain and as being something that was laid down as a hard and fast wired system,
right,
has now really been modified. We now understand that even in the adult brain, there's a lot of change going on all the time. It's like thinking, we think of bones as being something that's very permanent, but now we understand that bones, in fact, are turning over all the time. There's change going on in the bones.
Right.
And the same is true in the central nervous system. And
okay.
Part of that change is this constant process of making new small synapses.
This would explain something like post-traumatic stress, wouldn't it?
Absolutely.
Conditioning produces a response.
You're absolutely right, because stress, severe stress inhibits this process.
Yeah.
And certain types of hormones, including the estrogens, in, which are actually present in both males and females. People commonly think of estrogens as female sex hormones, but that's actually not really true either. They are estrogens have multiple roles in the body,
okay,
in both males and females. And estrogens promote this process of formation of small synapses in the brain. And so the processes that we started within the last few years that we began to be believe were responsible for this process of induction of synapse formation in the brain, echoed some observations that people were making in the reproductive tract. And so we, having seen the data on the bisphenol A interfered with normal development of the reproductive tract, in particular the prostate gland in males, we thought that perhaps if the same mechanisms were involved, there might indeed be interference with normal synapse formation in the brain as well.
Right.
And so that was the reason for to go to look at this.
Wow.
And we tried at first about 3 years ago in rats and showed that, yes, if you injected bisphenol A at really quite low doses, into it inhibits synapse formation in the brain.
Oh.
But there were two main questions that were left out of that study in rats. The first was that we were still doing something very acute, just injecting bisphenol, which, and that's very different from human exposure.
Right.
Human exposure is continuous and at a very low level. We're in human
and through the digestive tract, usually.
Yeah. So the second thing was that it was pointed out rapidly by the chemical companies and the plastics manufacturers. These studies in rats and mice, particularly with respect to estrogen action, cannot necessarily be taken as an index of what might happen in people.
Okay.
There are examples in the literature of things that interfere substantially with reproductive development in rodents and development of behavior in rodents that are sensitive to estrogen. And these same substances really don't have much of an effect in primates. Including our own species.
Okay.
So there certainly was reason to question whether or not an observation in a rat or a mouse would necessarily translate into a higher primate like ourselves.
Right.
So that was the basis of this study, because we thought that if we went to a primate, not obviously not humans, but at least an animal that had the same kind of 28-day menstrual cycle as a woman does,
and
has very similar reproductive system, and also had a similar brain, which higher primates do. And we then, instead of just giving a single injection, if we actually gave the bisphenol A in a continuous low-dose exposure formulation, which is closer to normal, to a human exposure, we asked the question whether there'd been an effect. And we really didn't know, because it was quite possible the study would have shown no effect at all.
Or no observable effect,
No observable effect, correct, that's fine. But in fact, much to our surprise, the effects were even more dramatic than in the rat. The continuous exposure with the bisphenol A, in fact, completely blocked the effect of estrogen on synapse formation. This is further evidence, at least to suggest that the limits which are being set by governments around the world on bisphenol A exposure should really be looked at. We used I have to say here that the Canadian government has in fact been very proactive. The Canadian government was the first government to really state openly that bisphenol A might be dangerous.
Okay.
And so And that's why, in fact, many goods in, for sale in Canada already had bisphenol A, that they're plastic things that used to be made with bisphenol A, and you can go to the stores now and already find that they're not being made with bisphenol A anymore.
Right.
So, but the real concern with bisphenol A has always been that the way in which the hazard was assessed was using a specific endpoint, a particular test, which was actually not very sensitive to some of the things that bisphenol A does.
Okay.
And so that's why we, many of us in this field, and we're just one group. There are more than 130 papers now from people who've shown low-dose effects of bisphenol A.
How did yours make the paper?
It did because it was the first one to look at a continuous exposure effect on the brain in a primate.
All right.
So it's the great majority of the previous studies have been done using injections into small animals.
Right.
And always the question was, does these studies really translate across species, the species barrier?
Gotcha.
And how do they relate to the more normal situation of essentially continuous low-dose exposure?
Yeah.
So basically what our studies show is that what we got in rats by injecting it, we actually get even more dramatic effects in monkeys when we with continuous exposure.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. And I've noticed that you've not gone beyond the bounds of the research to indicate where bisphenol A is still a threat and where it's not.
No. I mean, I think that really all that we can say at the moment is that the government standards should probably be looked at. Now, the dose we used was the dose which the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency defines as safe for daily human consumption.
So it's the maximum that's safe?
That's the maximum that they would define as safe for daily human consumption.
Okay. Is now this same thing here in use in Canada?
In Canada, the daily limit, I think, is lower than that. It's, I believe, twofold lower than the U.S. one. In Europe, it's fivefold lower. So Canada and Europe, I believe, Europe has had a fivefold lower limit for quite some years now.
Okay.
Canada has had a lower limit as well.
But what your study is showing is that the limits may need to be lower as well.
Yes. Well, because
studies are conducted to show that.
We were actually really surprised that using what is the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency's safe daily limit, we thought we might get some inhibition. What we were not expecting was that the response would be completely wiped out.
Really?
The response to estrogen is just not there anymore in the presence. So this would suggest that you're probably going to get some effects of bisphenol A even at lower doses.
So what does this mean in terms of the what would the effect on someone who had experienced this, how would it manifest itself?
That's a very good question because, of course, we still don't know exactly what the role is of these small rapidly turning over synapses in the brain. We do know.
When you say they rapidly turn over, you mean they rapidly fire or they
rapidly change?
They can change. Okay.
The
yeah.
Number. Yeah. The number of these synapses. This is
constantly
this is
being created
constantly
and destroyed.
Changing. As we're talking now.
Right.
In fact, there are little tiny synapses are being formed and lost again in our brains all
right.
the time, and so. There is still controversy about exactly what the role of these things is.
Mm-hmm.
We do know, from studies in both humans and animals, that some types of neurological problems are associated with defects in synapse formation.
Okay.
One specific example, is depression.
Oh.
In depression, we know that, and in animal models of depression, synapse formation is suppressed.
All right.
We also know that in human beings, if things that we know elevate synapse density, increase synapse formation in animals, if you give those things to human beings, they have an antidepressant and a mood-elevating effect. So one of the possible things is one of the possible relationships is the depression. We also know that these same things that anything that elevates synapse density also improves learning and memory. So there is the possibility that that if you put in something like bisphenol A that is inhibiting these processes, it may have adverse effects on mood state and on learning ability.
In memory.
Yeah. In animal studies, certainly, there have been some studies from Italy which have shown that learning and memory in developing rats are altered if they're exposed to bisphenol A when they're young.
And they're altered how? They're just more difficult?
It's a very subtle alteration. It's not like they can't learn anymore. It's just that they're... that normal patterns are disrupted a little bit. Learning is a very complex thing. Learning has many components to it, and the different components are affected in such a way that the patterns just aren't the same as in an animal that hasn't been exposed.
I can see that short-term memory is an integral component of abstracting.
Even
if you only need to hold it in your memory for long enough to grasp that it's like something else, it's an integral component. If you don't have the short-term memory, you can't make abstractions. If you can't make abstractions, you have trouble thinking.
And in fact, this is where mood state and memory are actually linked. Mood in some ways can be viewed as a disorder of cognition, that you're seeing things differently than when you're not depressed, and you're interpreting things differently. That may be the connection.
Wow. Yes,
certainly in rats, some studies that have been done in New York City by a collaborator of mine have shown that even very low doses of bisphenol A given to rats in learning tests interfere with their ability to learn, particularly in relation to learn spatial information, like where things are.
Like cheese,
in this case, what they do is they put objects in the cage and then they change one of them and ask the question of whether or not, or change the position of one of them and ask the question of whether the rat notices that something has changed. It's actually quite a sophisticated test for rats, because the rats, of course, don't have the abilities that we do.
But still, that's a survival skill if you elevate it to our level.
That's
What's changed in your environment? Nothing.
Absolutely true, rats need, in the wild, they need to be able to find their way around their environment in the dark, because they're normally nocturnal. When they come out of their burrows and go out to feed around their little neighborhood around their burrows, they need to be able to find their way back to the burrows in a hurry. Based upon landmarks in the environment, because if a predator suddenly appears like a cat, to survive, they've got to get back to their burrows. There is this possible relationship, but of course we can't say that for certain at the present time, because and how this might relate to human beings, because
it's rats again.
The data that are obtained have shown that bisphenol A does these things to synapses, and it also does these things to rat behavior. But whether that really translates into changes in behavior in humans is something that needs further study.
We'll take a short break now. Memphis Slim, The Dirty Dozens.
Thank you.
listening to Dr. Neil McCluskey, professor at the University of Guelph and senior author of a study of the effect on primates of bisphenol A from polycarbonate bottles and the disabilities linked to them.
Is it fair to say that synapse formation is the one of the processes by which we adapt our brains to both injury and to solving unfamiliar tasks?
It may very well be. And one of the hypotheses that is out there as the basis for memory is comes from Eric Kandel, who won the Nobel Prize a few years ago. And the hypothesis is that these small synapses, which are constantly turning over, are basically the substrate on which memory works. That you take, in order to make a memory, you take all these small synapses, which are appearing and disappearing all the time, and you make some of them permanent. You convert them from these very tiny little transient synapses, and you convert them into permanent connections.
Wow!
And that's how you make memories.
Wow!
Now there is experimental evidence, considerable experimental evidence to back that up. What that means is that increasing the number of these small, rapidly turning over synapses, which is what we do with these hormone treatments, is not going to make new memories for you.
Right.
But because there's more of the little synapses to draw on, it may make it easier to learn. That's why things that turn on this process of small synapse formation seem to enhance memory, certainly in animals. And that made the basis of it. So that's why it's certainly of concern that a chemical in our environment turns this process off.
All right.
Now, the other thing that I think I've been very careful about, I think everybody has to be careful about interpreting these studies, because while we have used a dose which is equivalent to the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency's safe daily limit, that dose is still substantially above actual human exposure levels. So actual human exposure levels in general, people have been widely exposed to bisphenol A, but the levels are much lower even than the US EPA's safe daily limit.
Like down around the European factor of 10, or do we know
even
how low?
Even below the European factor, it's more like anywhere up to about 50 or 100 times lower. So the kind of doses, the kind of exposure level that human beings have had in Canada and the United States is well below even the low doses that we have used.
Okay.
So that also has to be taken into consideration in interpreting the studies, because our studies certainly suggest that the current safety limits perhaps should be lowered.
Gotcha.
But whether or not this really means anything in terms of the health of populations of people in general is still an open question.
And the question of the effect on developing brains, I guess, is still by inference, right? It's not proven.
It still is, because the Italian studies did use, and the studies on prostate from Fred von Saal, who's a scientist working in Columbia, Missouri, these studies, they did go down to quite low doses given during development and got effects. But in general, the general rule of thumb in studies on toxic chemicals is that whatever the dose is that is required to produce an effect in adults, something considerably lower than that may very well produce effects during development, and the general rule of thumb is you need to have about a tenfold safety margin in development.
Okay.
Because developing organs are more sensitive.
All right, yeah.
So that's another factor we don't really know yet, because we haven't looked in development.
Yeah.
I think it's a very interesting question what would happen if you took exactly the kind of levels that human beings have been exposed to, and you exposed animals to that right the way through development, and that's what would happen. Those kinds of studies have not really been done yet.
Is there money for them?
Well, I think so. I mean, I think this is something that the governments actually have woken up to the potential risk here, because bisphenol A is just one example of chemicals that are out there in the environment that interfere with hormone action.
Right.
There are many of them. And in most cases, we don't really have a very good idea of all the things that they may do.
Right.
So I think bisphenol A, it's going to be important to really establish what bisphenol A is doing and how much of it is really, what kind of exposure really is safe and doesn't have the limit below which there is no effect. At the same time, with bisphenol A, the problem in most cases is quite easy to solve, because the majority of uses of bisphenol A, industrial uses, do not involve things that come into real close contact with humans. We're not going to be eating things from the containers or drinking from them. And there are substitutes. There are already substitutes on the in Canadian stores. If you go in and buy a baby bottle now, you're going to find in every store I've been into recently, already the shelves are stocked with bottles that are clear plastic, but they are no longer made with bisphenol A. The same is true for a student came into a class of mine just before the weekend, brandishing a water bottle on the bottom, said clearly bisphenol A free. So it's quite easy in many cases to find substitutes.
Okay.
And the places where bisphenol A is, other places where bisphenol A is used, these are things that we don't eat. For example, they're used in making a lot of plastics that are used in furniture and plastic windows, or making CDs and DVDs, those kinds of uses.
Okay.
And there, bisphenol A is perfectly safe because it's bound up in the plastic and it's never going to get into our bodies.
Well, provided I suppose we dispose of these responsibly.
As long as we dispose of them, yes, I think that's always the assumption.
Is it cultural, this use of bisphenol A up until now? Is it because we use oil so freely? Is it a petrochemical based?
The reason is, it's a very pragmatic reason, is that it actually is it makes very good plastics. It makes hard, clear plastics, which have many, many uses. Highly resistant to breakage.
And yet polyethylene is really no less useful, and it doesn't contain any.
Yes, except the polyethylene is not hard the same way.
Bisphenol
A containing plastics are extremely, they're clear, almost like glass, but they don't break. So polycarbonate plastics are extremely useful because they are so resistant to breakage. You have to try very hard, for example. You'll have to really work at breaking a DVD.
I remember when GE introduced Lexan and challenged, users to take a sledgehammer to it.
Yes, that's exactly.
Put it into bulletproof. Enclosures without a lot of trouble.
Yes. So bisphenol is a very useful chemical that makes wonderful hard clear plastics, but it probably should not be used freely in food containers.
And things that aren't recycled, probably. You know, we should be careful to recycle this stuff.
Well, the other good thing about bisphenol A is that it's not like some of the other chemicals that we have in the past put in the environment. It's not bioaccumulated in the same way. It's not that once it gets out there, it's going to be concentrated
In the food chain,
and the food chain, and hang around PCBs and docks and things like that. Were concentrated in the food chain and hung around this for a long, long time.
Yeah.
Bisphenol A is not that kind of chemical. It's not halogenated. So unlike the PCBs and dioxins and pesticide residues and this kind of stuff. So bisphenol A can be disposed of, and can be disposed of reasonably fast. So if you do get some bisphenol A into your body, as long as it's only a brief exposure, you're going to get rid of it quite quickly too.
Again, back to the beginning of the rationale for your experiment, it was the continual dose that made it effective.
We think that may be Exactly. We think that that may be key. We need to look more at what low-dose continuous exposure does, because that that is much closer to the kind of thing that's happened in human populations over the last generation.
Yeah. So for someone interested in this, how would you expect they follow the line of research and the results that are still to come?
I think there's probably from here on there's going to be quite high publicity given to find new findings as they come out, because the thing that has, I think, held the field back is the fact that the majority of the studies were done in rodent species where it wasn't easy to see the relationship to people. So rats and mice only. And it was, these are studies done with injections. So again, the relationship to the kind of things that are happening in humans was not really obvious.
And, okay.
So I think certainly these studies have heightened people's awareness of the potential problems. So I anticipate that that further developments will be given fairly high publicity. Matter who's doing the studies.
Okay.
I think the other thing that is important to bear in mind, of course, is that there's still controversy in this field.
On
the same day as our paper was published, a U.S. toxicology panel came out with a report once again stating that bisphenol A was safe.
All right.
The very same day. So they weren't aware of our results because we couldn't discuss them until last week.
Yeah, until they were published, right.
Because until they were published, we're not allowed to use them. When a journal like PNAS accepts a paper, they put an embargo on you're not allowed to discuss the work until the publication date.
Sure.
So I was actually invited to the panel in Washington that was discussing bisphenol A, which was in June, and I really couldn't go.
yeah, I guess, eh?
Because,
why is that man so quiet?
I would have been sitting there biting my tongue because we had these data, but we weren't allowed to talk about them at that point.
All right.
The paper wasn't even accepted at that when I got the invitation. So,
Well, thank you for your time in discussing this. Was there anything else that you wanted to say that we haven't covered? Because we've been pretty thorough.
I think the most important thing for people, Canadians in general, to recognize, two important things. First is, as I've said, the actual exposure levels of people in the whole North America are still well below the doses that we've used.
Right.
So there's no reason for people to be highly concerned at this point. And the second point is, as I said before, the Canadian government, in fact, is to be congratulated for being very proactive in this. They've taken the lead in trying to say...
Health Canada, in effect.
Health Canada. They were the first government to come right out and say that we think there's concern over this chemical. There was concern in some quarters, for example, in California. California had been quite proactive, and the Japanese had been proactive in some areas too. They'd taken out of baby bottles. But in terms of a sort of national public health agency statement, Canada was really the first to come out and say there's concern over this. So I think that's been very helpful, because that's the reason we already have a situation where most water bottles and baby bottles and food containers that are on the shelves in Canadian stores are now bisphenol A free.
Very good. Are there other people involved who should be
In the study, the co-workers were actually people I've worked with some years at Yale University.
At Yale, okay.
Yeah, I moved back to Canada only 3 years ago.
Oh, okay.
And we'd established a collaboration before I moved back, and this is a continuation of that work.
Does that make you lead author, or...?
I was the last author, the traditional senior author.
Okay.
The first author was somebody called Chaba Leranthi, C-S-A-B-A, Leranthi, L-E-R-A-N-T-H, who is a professor at Yale. And we've collaborated to over almost 20 years together.
Good. I'll air that Thursday, and I'll post that sooner than usual because it sounds worth knowing that we have significant findings and don't yet have proof of significant danger.
That's right.
All right, thanks.
Okay, thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Dr. Neil McCluskey, professor at the University of Guelph and senior author of a study of the effect on primates of bisphenol A from polycarbonate bottles and the disabilities linked to them. And now a short break. Memphis Slim, Joggy Boogie. The news clippings for disrespect. We did put in a call and an email on this to a formal federal cabinet minister. Perhaps not surprisingly, we haven't gotten a reply. Social injustice can kill. There are other people on the panel and we can contact them. No doubt they'll be more interested. The report by a Blue Ribbon International panel being released Thursday, August 28th in Geneva, says essentially there's little point in trying to prevent and treat illness without tackling the underlying root causes such as poverty, poor housing, inadequate education, and lack of human rights. Okay, that's from The Globe, Thursday, August 28th, if you'd like to know more about that. From The Star, Wednesday, September 3rd, two grieving fathers challenged the use of antidepressants In 2003, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration began issuing warnings about prescribing SSRIs, selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, to anyone under 18. Health Canada issued a similar public warning the same year. Neil Carlin blames antidepressants for the suicide of his daughter, Sarah. Took her own life last spring when she was just 18. Mohamed Kajuji becomes emotional describing his daughter Nadia's descent into depression while attending university in Ottawa. Carleton University wouldn't let Mr. Kajuji have medical information about his daughter. Before he could find out how she was doing, she died. Since those warnings, numerous studies have cited a sweeping decline in SSRI prescription rates among young people across North America. At the same time, other studies have shown a spike in youth suicides. The leading theory, says Dr. Jeffrey Bridge, an Ohio researcher, is the warnings led to fewer troubled young Americans being diagnosed and treated for depression. Okay? Dialogue at inbox.com, D-I-A-L-O-G at inbox.com. New hope for Fragile X syndrome, Toronto Star. Again, Thursday, August 28th, dopamine drugs reverse some symptoms in mice with genetic syndrome, Toronto researcher says. The disease, Fragile X syndrome, is caused by a mutation of the so-called FMR1, Fragile X mental retardation 1 gene, located on the X chromosome. The mutation reduces or eliminates production of the gene's normal product, a protein known as FMRP. The protein plays a critical role in allowing dopamine to perform important developmental functions. In particular, binding to key neurons in the forebrain, dopamine can activate the proper development of learning, memory storage, attention, decision-making capacity, and motor functions. In the absence of the FMRP protein, however, dopamine is unable to trigger these normal neural activities, and the growth of these functions is severely impaired. Because dopamine is one of the most important neurotransmitters controlling many cognitive, emotional, and movement functions, there are many drugs already in human use that might improve its uptake in Fragile X patients. Apparently, Fragile X, with the strange name, is more common than people would expect. New drugs in late-stage trials offer promises for sufferers of the chronic and crushing disease, multiple sclerosis. This, of all places, from Forbes, September 1, 2008. There's discussion of a drug, Dirucotide, which has grown out of research conducted at the University of Alberta, where they developed a synthetic peptide that mimics myelin protein. Myelin is the substance that coats the nerves that multiple sclerosis strips away. In 1995, after more than a decade of tinkering, Acorda, a privately held company, approached the company that had developed Famperdine SR in spinal cord injury patients. Acorda began clinical trials in 1998, 5 years later, secured the rights for Famperdine SR. Acorda started its tests of Famperdine SR in MS patients in late 1999, and in June this year, the now public company completed late-stage trials in 540 patients with all four types of MS. The results are impressive. 43% of the patients showed consistent improvement in walking speed as against 9% of patients on a placebo. Acorda plans to submit its data to the Federal Drug Administration in the States early next year and ask the agency for fast-track approval. How about that? Vaccine for shingles approved. Now, shingles is sometimes a complement for disabilities that impair immune function or alter immune function. Health Canada has approved a vaccine that prevents shingles outbreaks in people who had chickenpox earlier in life. Shingles occurs in all age groups, but the curve starts to increase rapidly somewhere around age 50, explained Dr. Allison McGeer, an infectious disease specialist at Mount Sinai Hospital. And then the increase gets steeper and steeper as you get older and older. The vaccine, called Zostavax, is licensed for people 60 and older. Its manufacturer, Merck Frost Canada, declined to estimate what the one-shot vaccine will cost when it becomes available to Canadians sometime later next year. I dare say it can be made available to people who are younger than that if their doctor concurs. Ahead of games, city reaches out to Vancouver homeless, aims to take hundreds of people off the streets of the downtown east side. Now, we've had this happen in Toronto without Olympic Games to spur the initiative, and people in Toronto are divided about whether it's a good thing or not. You've heard shows on disrespect explaining why it's not been a good thing. There have been various estimates on homelessness in Vancouver with few specific figures on the downtown east side. Some have suggested about 1,547 in Vancouver, while another has suggested there are 2,000 residents in the downtown east side who are not being properly cared for by the system. The project is aimed at studying best practices for providing shelter and mental health and addiction treatment. Participants will receive rental subsidies and other help with housing. If you'd like to hear about that from an activist in Vancouver, whether it's a janitorial effort or if it's really a help to the people that it's applied to, write us at dialogue@inbox.com, okay? And the high spot or low spot of the news. This time around, September 5th, Toronto Star, top airlines challenge free seat rule for disabled. The country's major airlines have asked the Supreme Court of Canada to overturn a regulator's decision that would require them to give free seats to passengers requiring an attendant or obese passengers who need the extra space. Air Canada and regional carrier Jazz and WestJet Airlines filed the request for leave to appeal in early August, after the Canadian Transportation Agency handed down a so-called one-person, one-fare decision earlier this year. I have a call into a law firm about that. I have no response. There will be people interested in talking about that, whether they're legally involved in it or not. It depends on whether you want to hear it. Dialogue@inbox.com. D-I-A-L-O-G. Let us know what you want us to cover. Dialogue@inbox.com. And now our weekly look-in with Kader Balooney, blind, in sanctuary, in a church in Montreal, awaiting approval of immigration application number 2.
Hi, Kader, it's Jeff. How are you?
I'm doing my coffee.
What's that?
I'm doing my coffee.
Oh, you're making coffee.
I'm making my coffee.
Oh, that's okay.
I slept.
When was that? This morning? Till now?
No. I feel like napping.
Oh, napping. Okay. So you've been napping?
Yeah, I was napping. Yeah, because I was so tired.
In the paper, I noticed that people are profiling, I guess is the word, Doug Finlay, Diane Finlay's husband. And they say he's the pit bull. He's the executioner for the Conservative government. So the Finlays are not getting good press these days. The heat's on. If they win a majority, you know, it won't matter. If they don't win a majority, you know, I don't think the eyes will go off them. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah, I'm thinking the Conservatives are going to become a majority this month.
Yeah, maybe.
Because I'll be honest.
Yeah.
It's the Conservatives are already a majority in the parliament. It's all because the Liberals, they never, like, do something.
Oh, I see what you mean, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm thinking the Liberals doesn't like that.
No.
Doesn't like it. That's Harper, he said, the parliament doesn't work.
Yeah. Well, the parliament does work, except he doesn't get credit for what he does, I suppose, because it's like Dion keeps calling him a bully, you know? So he doesn't get credit for doing the stuff. So if he's the majority government, they can call him what they like. Doesn't matter.
Yeah, but anyway, the governor, the Harper, he will feel like he's majority in the parliament.
Yeah.
Because the whole thing is passed, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
All the law, what he wants is passed, and he doesn't like that. He feel like he's, and the bloc and the MP, he doesn't do nothing. You know what I mean? Because it's a small group.
Yeah.
And the liberals, like, just looking and, like, you know?
Yeah.
The Harper, he doesn't like that. He's smart. I like him how he's smart.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll find out.
I'm thinking this time who I'm going to be majority.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of people agree with you. I think a lot of people think that's true, too. Unless something happens in Afghanistan, you know. And I think the Taliban know that if they want to change Canadians' minds, now is the time. So I feel badly for the soldiers who are there right now.
Yeah, but the, you have to understand, it's not Harper who sent the soldiers there. It's the Liberals.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, that's for sure. If Harper he wasn't the government, he wouldn't stand for sure. But it's not him. He's anyway. He's the Liberals stand. Yeah, and here in Quebec, 70% of the population here doesn't agree with the government to stand.
70%.
70%, yeah, 70.
Oh, okay. Well, you're getting a good view of Canadian politics now with the with an election in full swing. Do you do it all on the internet?
No. I have my radio show, but I never talk about that.
No, I can understand.
No.
I did awards on my last radio show. I have to post it to the web. Yeah, we gave an award to Tony Clement, the Kijiji Award for the best seller, and we gave. Let me see. What did we give Dalton McGuinty? We gave him an award, too, for going after the federal government for more money, but not for the poor or the disabled. And we gave Michael McCain the Dudley Do-Right Award for trying to find the cause of the listeria outbreak, which not many corporate people would do.
But anyway, we hope for good leadership,
Well, understanding that not all the country feels like Alberta, you know, and if they keep that in mind, then maybe good leadership, yeah.
Yeah, we need good leadership. We don't care, you know, what he came, what his language, you know what I mean?
Yeah. What was it? They said that about the United States. I read that today in the Star. Sarah Palin, so she's opposed to abortion. Well, what has anybody else done for abortion since the 70s? Nothing, you know. So can this be so bad if she is a leader? And she is the governor of Alaska, so lead she can. So somebody was making that argument in the paper today, and you can make the same argument about Harper. No, Harper's not in favor of a lot of social programs, but what have the Liberals done for social programs? Sweet Fanny Adams, so... Yeah, so, I mean, can it be a lot worse? Maybe not, you know, who knows? I saw a cartoon today. It said there was a ballot, a picture of a ballot, and they had the two candidates and the two circles where you're supposed to put your X if you're cited. And the two candidates were, one was fear and one was loathing. Well, it was pretty good.
What's better news?
Oh, the Toronto Star.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, any artwork going ahead? Any work on the CD? Any work on slam poetry?
Yeah, I'm working on my CD, but like...
Slowly.
You know, it's slowly because it's... I feel like I said, I feel no more energy. But last night I wrote one song.
Oh, wow, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Okay.
And now I have, like, at least 20 songs.
Oh, yeah?
But, like, my CD now, it's, like, that's it. And it's 4 songs.
Yeah.
But it's just I need to record them. And
so you have written all the songs?
Huh?
You've written all the songs for the new CD?
Yeah.
Okay,
good. Yeah.
So you're on Gmail, eh?
I'm Gmail, yeah. Good. Yeah, carterbb@gmail.com.
Except. Okay. Is that your end?
No.
That beeping is my end?
Yeah.
Lovely. Lovely. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Well, we'll talk to you again on Monday, and if anything big happens, you... Oh, I got a new cell phone over the weekend.
Yeah?
I'll send you the number with the file. It's the old...
You know what?
What?
I don't have money to pay my phone. I'm thinking today it's going to be the last day.
Oh, no.
But I swear to God. But anyway, I want to call them to make another day with them.
If you call Fido, you will get a deal.
Yeah.
Especially if they know who you are.
Yeah. They know. Like,
all right. Yeah. All right. I wish you the best.
Yeah.
Came very close to me getting cut off, too. Seems the season. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Katie Webster to take us out. Two-Fisted Mama. You can now listen to the show wherever you're near the internet. Disrespect is streamed live at http://cfmu.mcmaster.ca. Disrespect is archived at www.radioforall.net. That's the number four, not the word, radioforall.net. You can find the shows under its name, Disrespect. Tune in at Showtime, Thursdays at noon, 93.3 FM, CFMU, to see if something more topical hasn't displaced the show that we planned. Disrespect is digitally edited from live telephone and studio interviews.